The next case is 2010-0052, Plain Local Schools Board of Education versus Franklin County Board of Revision. And Ms. Fox, again, for the appellant.
Again, I thank the court, Carol Fox, and this time I am here on behalf of the New Albany Plain Local Schools Board of Education. We believe that this is, again, a case where the Board of Tax Appeals ultimately gave undue deference to the Board of Revision decision. But the facts of this are a little bit different, and the basis is a little bit different in this case, although the danger is still as great, if not greater. In this particular case, the property owner initiated by filing a Board of Revision complaint asking for a reduction. Of course, the property owner had the burden of proving its right to a reduction, but at the Board of Revision, the property owner presented no evidence, no valuation evidence as of tax lien date, which was January 1st, 2005. Instead, they presented a summary appraisal report which had been prepared and valued the property as of May of 2004. This report had been prepared by James and David Powers, appraisers who never appeared in this case at either the Board of Revision or the Board of Tax Appeals. Because James and David Powers were not there, the property owner instead presented testimony from another appraiser within that firm, Karen Blosser. Karen Blosser was employed by the Powers firm at the time of she testified. She was not employed by at the time the report was prepared. And in fact, the record does, I believe, reflect that she was formerly employed by the property owner, which creates a whole another level of conflict and problem. When the Board of Tax Appeals was reviewing the record in this case, they recognized that the absence of Powers from the Board of Revision hearing and his failure to value the property as of tax lien date created a problem. And in so recognizing that, they acknowledged that the Powers' opinion of value could not be relied upon for those reasons. Yet it then turned around and affirmed the decision of the Board of Revision, which was in fact the exact value placed on the property in the Powers report, and they provided no justifiable basis for that. All of the data contained in the report, not just the ultimate opinion of value, but all of the data contained in the report, consisted of the rankest form of hearsay. None of the data was verified by the preparer. None of the data can even pertain to tax lien date. It was data that was gathered for evaluation as of May 2004. None of the underlying comparables, market data, or the adjustments were verified by the preparer of the document. This report was properly objected to at the Board of Revision hearing, yet the Board of Revision appeared to rely upon it because it gave the reduction grant asked for by the property owner. Instead, the property owner attempted to bootstrap this hearsay evidence in by having Karen Blosser testify. But an oral opinion that is offered by a review appraiser based solely on his or her review of an inadmissible appraisal is not competent and probative evidence of value. Ms. Blosser did not verify any of the data contained in the report. She did not establish whether or not that she had inspected or even had any familiarity with the comparable properties used in the report. She did not appraise the property, and that's very important, because she could not offer an opinion of value when she did not appraise the property. That would be in violation of the guidelines that are required by appraisers to be met when they are certified in the state of Ohio. She did not comment on the validity of the adjustments made, and this is important because the BTA got this wrong. They said that she did, and she did not. She did not testify that the Powers adjustments were appropriate. That is a misstatement, a misunderstanding by the Board of Tax Appeals. Likewise, the Board of Tax Appeals incorrectly stated that Ms. Blosser has provided her testimonial opinion of the property's worth on tax lien date. Again, She could not, as an appraiser, have offered her opinion. She did not appraise the property. In fact, what she stated was that she, quote, didn't find anything that would suggest that the $2 million was not a reasonable value. That is, in fact, what she said. In our reply brief, we set forth all of the requirements of the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice that must be followed before an appraiser can offer an independent opinion of value. In this case, Ms. Blosser did not take any of these required steps, nor did she claim that she did. The BTA decision again erroneously stated that Ms. Blosser further testified that she would not change anything in the report except to adjust the as-of date from May 2004 to January 1st, 2005. She never said this. In reality, she simply summarized the contents of the inadmissible appraisal report that was prepared by her employer prior to the time she even worked at that firm. She provided no verified factual data to support even the very general statement that she could not find anything to suggest that $2 million was not a reasonable value. The BTA recognized that Blosser's, quote, opinion was supported, quote, with appraisal evidence of another's written report, which was not as of tax lien date, close quote. The BTA recognized that was the basis for her, what they saw to be her opinion. Again, we do not agree that it was an opinion, but the BTA saw that to be her opinion, recognized that the basis for this was, in fact, the inadmissible and unreliable report according to the BTA's own, decision.
Although well, there's a reference to the AP Hotels case, what are the differences then between this case and, say, the AP
Hotels? The AP Hotels case, the appraiser who prepared the report actually came. They were actually subject to cross-examination. They actually were able to verify the data contained in the report and testify about that data. That is a very important and huge distinction in this case. Neither of the preparers of the report actually came at any level in this case to testify about the report. And because of that, the BOE, BOR, and BTA were all deprived of the opportunity to cross-examine the appraisers who actually had gathered the data. Both the BTA and the appellee call into question the fact that counsel for the BOE did not question Ms. Blosser about this, but what would that questioning have accomplished? She had no personal knowledge about the report or the data contained therein. She did not appraise the property. Any relevant questions asked of her would only have elicited speculative responses or further hearsay. I will reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fox. Mr. Amaro.
Thank you, Your Honor. We've heard it on prior cases today also, and we believe this is, in fact, where's the burden lie at the Board of Tax Appeals is one issue, but more importantly, this case has more than what the appellants suggest it has in its brief. There is testimony before the Board of Revision, none from the Board of Education, but from Huntington National Bank standpoint, which did present Mr. Mashinsky, Ms. Putterball, and also Ms. Blosser. The indication or the suggestion that the appellant's brief is that there's nothing in this record other than a written report generated by two other individuals, and that's all anybody has. Well, that's not true. What we have is the testimony of the Huntington representatives about what was in place in the lease abstracts that were admitted into evidence without objection from the Board of Education at the Board of Revision hearing, detailing what are the actual terms of the leases in place, not as of May 2004, but as of the tax lien date. We also have evidence from Ms. Blosser, who provided testimony. She did summarize, in some respects, some of the information contained in the appraisal report, but she did something in addition to that. She personally inspected the property just prior to the hearing date. She testified regarding two properties that were mentioned in the report, not detailed as sales comps, but mentioned as listings of similar properties in the adjacent area or in the area of this particular property that in fact sold between the date of the reports and the date of the Board of Revision hearing. She testified what those sales were for. Two similar buildings sold at $91 a square foot when the listing prices for those properties, as it was listed in the report, were $125 per square foot. The ultimate value in this case, is this is a 13,000 plus square foot building, is about $150 per square foot. She identified two sale transactions, similar properties, that sold for two-thirds or less of that value. She also indicated that, as I said before, that she was, and the question is, what, you know, they're trying to pin this as, what didn't she say? Well, what did she say? Well, she said, she didn't say that I don't have any personal knowledge about the contents or the properties that are listed in this report. She could have been questioned on cross-examination by the Board of Education representative or by the Board of Revision or by the Board of Tax Appeals if the Board of Education had chosen not to waive the hearing. What we have here is some evidence. I'm not representing to this court that this is the best and only evidence or the best evidence that has ever been presented in a case, but it's some evidence of value substantiated in addition with the findings that the Board of Tax Appeals and the Board of Revision made. The Board of Revision, in its, there is a transcript, unlike the first case we had here today, there is a transcript of what transpired. And the Board of Revision individuals who deliberated on this particular property expressed that they had familiarity with the area, they had familiarity with the neighborhood, they had familiarity with the information that was contained in this report. And they made it very clear, both the Board of Revision and the Board of Tax Appeals, that they weren't going to simply certify the opinion of value from the Powers appraisal. They looked beyond that information. They looked to Ms. Putterbaugh, they looked to Mr. Mashinsky, they looked to the Blosser testimony that was not objected to. I would point out the, you know, the objection raised at the in the brief or at the Board of Revision level was because it's not as of the tax lien date and it wasn't added for ad valorem tax purposes. Ms. Blosser's testimony was never objected to the extent what she testified to, which was that she felt the value established in that written appraisal was a fair value, that the appraisal report it adopted rational understandings in the way appraisers are supposed to value properties. And she articulated that she did not find any difference in the market between the time period of when that appraisal was certified and the tax lien date. That was her testimony. No questions were asked. The opportunity was there and they chose not to do it. They did not object to her testimony. We have a waiver situation in effect as to what she actually said. And both the Board of Revision and the Board of Tax Appeals made it abundantly clear in their decisions that they knew they had an issue that they had to deal with, that they knew they had to independently weigh all the evidence, all the facts, all the circumstances, not just the Powers appraisal report, and establish their value. And that's exactly what they did. I think in this situation, we're challenging the sufficiency of the evidence, and the only evidence before both the Board of Revision and the Board of Tax Appeals is what was in the transcript. There's no evidence that was presented on appeal, and we have a situation where it's the BTA's obligation to determine the weight and the credibility of the evidence. That's exactly what they did. If you look at their decisions or their decision at pages 8 and 9, they recited exactly the issue they were dealing with. They recited the other aspects of the testimony that they did rely upon and not just this Powers written appraisal report. And they did acknowledge Ms. Blosser expressed an opinion of value, a verbal opinion of value that was unchanged from that written report. The situation in I believe is articulated. There's a brief citation in the highlights for children case, which we cited in our brief that says it does not matter whether the court, this court, would weigh the evidence differently from the board, this court, in, or if this court would have made a different original determination. However, as long as there is evidence which reasonably supports the conclusion, this court will not substitute its decision for the Board of Tax Appeals. And that's what the Board of Education in this case is seeking. The indication also regarding what Ms. Blosser did, she testified that she didn't feel any of the information contained in the report, as it may have related to vacancies. She knew what the lease rates were because she had the information from the lease abstracts that were admitted into evidence. She had information that if she disagreed with what was summarized in that report, she could have testified to that fact. She didn't. She supported the final conclusion. She made her own independent opinion of value, or stated her own independent opinion of value, and that's the evidence before both the Board of Revision and the Board of Tax Appeals. The court inquired about the AP Hotels case. I would admit that it can be distinguished in some respects, but at the same point, the court in that case said, look beyond the written appraisal. Is there something else there that you can base your decision upon? And if there is, we aren't going to substitute our judgment. That's exactly what has happened in this case. There is evidence in the record that supports the value that was ultimately determined by both the Board of Revision and the Board of Tax Appeals. And this isn't similar to the first case we heard today involving Montgomery County. There is a transcript, and the Board of Tax Appeals is not simply saying, well, we have to go with the Board of Revision decision because we can't find anything else in the record. This is a situation where they cited the Black case, they cited their duty to independently review the evidence before it at the appellate level, and they made their determination accordingly. From the standpoint of the Huntington National Bank, we would ask that this court affirm the decisions.
Thank you, Mr. Marr.
I know I've got time, and I'm willing to address any questions if the court has any.
Thank you, Mr. Marr.
Thank you.
Ms. Fox, you have 7 minutes and 11 seconds.
I'm getting quicker.
So there is evidence other than this appraisal that Mr. Morrow referred to.
The evidence other than the appraisal did consist solely of witnesses testifying to the existing leases. Those witnesses were not appraisers. We have no evidence as to whether or not the existing leases were at market, whether or not they were indicative of the market value for a lease. We have no analysis that takes those leases and runs them through an income approach to show, therefore, taking those leases, what the valuation would be, what would a proper capitalization rate be, what would proper expenses be, what would like types of properties sell for. We have none of that information other than that contained within the appraisal report, which was inadmissible hearsay.
And did Ms. Blosser also testify about some comparables?
The only comparable, there was a listing. And again, it was contained in the original report. There was a listing for two properties. Sometime later, those two properties sold together. So she talked about one sale and what that sale ultimately resulted in as far as the price. She did not indicate that she had any firsthand knowledge regarding that sale. She did not talk about the circumstances of the sale. Was that sale discounted because the same purchaser purchased both properties? We don't know. But one inspection.
But there was no objection to her testimony, Mr. Morrow said.
No, there wasn't. But one inspection and one sale does not an appraisal make. And the question still comes down to sufficiency. If you throw out the Powers appraisal, what do you have left? You have some actual leases. Again, we have no idea whether those are at market. We have the testimony of Ms. Blosser, whose opinion, if we're going to concede for the sake of argument that it was an opinion, we again don't believe it was, but it is solely based upon the Powers appraisal, because she certainly could not have based her own appraiser's opinion on one inspection and one sale. That would have violated all of the USPAP rules and regulations. She did not give her own appraiser's opinion of value for this property because she did not ever appraise this property. She never claimed to have appraised this property. And the problem lies within the BTA's own decision. If you look at page 9 of the decision, they specifically say, given Mr. Powers' absence from the BOR hearing and his failure to value the property as of tax lien date, we are unable to place reliance on his ultimate opinion of value. However, we do not wholly reject the appraisal itself, and that's where the problem lies. Because regardless of the fact that there may have been some testimony or evidence regarding leases, and regardless of this one sale that Ms. Blosser mentioned, that is not what the BTA relied upon in rendering its decision. It relied upon the data contained within this appraisal report, which was inadmissible hearsay. And it goes on to say, it talks about the Ms. Blosser's opinion of the reasonableness of the methodology. Again, she did not say that, but I suppose any of us could say, well, they used an income approach and a market approach, and that was reasonable. Sure, that's kind of required. Okay, that's a no-brainer. The comparables listed in the report for market rental rates, market capitalization rates, and sales comparisons all appear to relate to the subject because of their similarities in age, size, and proximity. Again, the Board of Tax Appeals is relying specifically upon data contained within the Powers report. It is not relying upon the leases. It is not relying upon that one sale that Ms. Blosser talked about. It is relying upon the underlying unverified hearsay evidence contained within the Powers report. It talks about the BOR being familiar with the neighborhood and concluding that a reduction was warranted. Again, the specific language that the Board of Revision used in rendering its decision, they specifically referred to the Powers report. They specifically note our objection but state that if anything, the value of the property decreased between May 2004 and January 1st, 2005. So therefore, it was okay to rely upon the Powers report. And that is inaccurate. We don't know. We don't have evidence with regard to January 1st, 2005, what the value of this property was. There was never any evidence presented that established a value other than the auditor's original value as of tax lien date for this property. The Board of Revision relied upon the appraisal report, and the Board of Tax Appeals relied upon the appraisal report. Maybe not the ultimate opinion of value, but they relied upon all of the data contained within the report and ultimately found the exact same opinion of value that they rejected one paragraph prior. I'm finished with my argument. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to take them.
Thank you, Ms. Fox.
Thank you.
This case will also be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.
Hear ye, hear ye.